Welcome, Senator Jason Berrickman, to Studio A. How are you?
I'm doing great. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Springfield, all a buzz here over the last couple of days. People returning to Springfield. It's like the Swallows to San Juan Capistrano.
Just like it. Spring training, the buzz.
Do people stand there on the north of town there watching all you guys come in?
Oh, yeah, there's a parade and standing ovation. Oh, yeah, that's what they're called.
Protesters. Here's what I suggested to Terry Renner last week. You tell me if this would fly. I don't care which side you're on here. Something's got to be done. You're frustrated with the gridlock in Springfield. The governor brought it all out yesterday, for the most part, in a State of the State address. I say people can march on Springfield. That's one thing. How about getting the mayors of every town, village, you name it, showing up to Springfield to talk about their displeasure?
They do sometimes. Now, is it all of them?
I mean, in mass. There needs to be a day. I want it to make national news. And then I want the speaker and the governor to come out and say, you know what? We've heard the people. We're going to turn this ship around and make it a great place to bring industry and business.
So you think that's going to happen this spring?
No, nothing's going to happen this spring.
Traditionally, a lot of mayors come to Springfield, actually. Now, I hear you. I mean, that's not your point. Your point is that there's this cry for progress, reform. There's a cry to turn our state around. And that's a cry that I hear every day. The challenge is navigating through what is a toxic environment in Springfield to actually get something positive done. It's been difficult to do over the last few years. The governor talked about this yesterday. You know, we've had some turbulent times, to say the least, over the last few years. A few bright spots: school funding reform, the energy law that helped the Clinton power plant. You know, there were some highlights over the last few years, but the people of this state want to see us fundamentally change direction, and that hasn't happened. This year's going to be tough to make that happen. I've been, with your listeners before, talking about the tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars that'll be spent this year on the political cycle. That makes it very difficult to get anything of policy actually done. So we've got to try. You got to try to persevere through that. But it's going to be a very challenging year, Scott.
So we heard there was a couple. There was one a Senate member and a House member a few weeks ago saying, you know what? The less we do, maybe the better it is down in Springfield. Can't screw it up if we're not there. And I thought, well, there's two that are just giving up.
Yeah. So, that is a view that has been often held over the years, right? The less time you spend in Springfield, the less time you have to screw something up. The reality is you can't look at Illinois and what's happening here and not desire some different outcome. And the different outcome comes from Springfield, right? We have thousands of people leaving this state. You know, we have population fleeing, not just going to warmer weather, going to neighboring states and elsewhere. We know that we're not attracting the jobs that we need, and other states are. So again, years ago, it used to be about the job losses to China and India and elsewhere. We're losing people and jobs to Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, the Carolinas, Texas, Atlanta. All these places.
Alabama got the car plant.
So these places are doing well, and it's a reflection of their ability to compete for those jobs and people in a way that we're not. And so, to me, the marching orders are go to Springfield and make our state compete like other states are competing. The challenge is, as a Republican, my view is not widely held among my colleagues. I mean, their view is quite different. And again, to come back to the election year, Madigan and Cullerton, the guys who run the legislative process, they're not going to give up easily this year on any reforms that Republicans, whether it's Rauner or any of us, they don't want to give up on any reforms that would suggest a win for Republicans because it's going to embolden them as you head towards the November elections. Now, I believe this is the opportunity for Bruce Rauner. He needs to demonstrate this year that he is a leader that the state needs. And I think, you know, when voters go to the polls this November, I think the critical question on their mind is going to be who of the candidates. And I think the candidates are likely to be Rauner and Biss, although you are seeing movement on both sides. You know, you're seeing some traction from Jeannie Ives.
Biss is going to be the Democrats' choice?
I wouldn't bet on Biss right now, but I would say that he is clearly moving in the right direction. I think Pritzker has plateaued, and more recently his numbers have diminished, which creates a window of opportunity for Biss. If you look at Biss's trending numbers, he's moving in the right. If I were him, I would say, hey, I'm moving in the right direction for a March primary. You couple that with there's a significant number of Democratic voters who today say they're going to vote for Chris Kennedy. That may change. You know, as you get closer to a primary, primary voters start to choose between the top two. And so if you're supporting one of the candidates that is in third place or lower, you tend to move away from that person and then to one of the top two. I think Biss gets a lot of Chris Kennedy votes, lots of them. I think Chris Kennedy votes are more aligned with the public perception of what Daniel Biss stands for. So, my point, though, is whomever the candidates are come November, I think the critical question for voters then is going to be who can lead our state no matter if Mike Madigan and the Democrats are in charge, if Republicans are in charge, if there's some divided legislative, you know, today there's a supermajority controlled by Democrats in the Senate but not in the House. Whatever the dynamics in the legislature, I think voters want to elect a governor who can lead.
You've been down in Springfield. How many years? You were in the House first?
2011.
Since 2011. Yep. All right. So
we'll have to do the math. Pull out your calculator. Put your calculator away, Scott.
I've got my fingers.
Carry them on.
You've been down there long enough. What would you do to lead the state of Illinois? If you were governor, how would you do things differently? Because I hear him. I listened to the debate the other day with the Chicago Tribune editorial board. And he said it before, Madigan runs the state. And is that untrue?
No, Madigan runs the legislature.
Now, but look, the state can't do anything. You can't pass any legislation without his approval.
True. But the governor can lead. And again, that's the power of the office of the governor. You've got the bully pulpit. You know, in politics, there is a lot that goes into how governmental decisions are made. It's the influence of the public through the media and otherwise. It's the influence of interest groups. You know, people don't like all of the stuff that goes into making sausage, but there's a lot to it. The governor has some unique tools at his disposal for which he should fully utilize. One of the tools he doesn't have is he can't introduce bills. He can't say bills, you know, need to move into this committee or out of that committee. And Madigan's a master of that stuff. But there's other tools that Republicans and the governor can use. I think our job, you know, we've got a Republican in the executive branch. I think our job is to put forward bold policy proposals to work through the media and the public to explain those proposals and demonstrate to the public why those are good ideas and why those ideas could be meaningful, and then work within the political process to cut good deals. You know, I mean, that's what this comes down to, is the public wants to see progress. And so you've got to put your ideas out there. You've got to lead on your ideas, work through the media to influence the public to support your ideas. And then ultimately, you need to get something done. And that means you have to work through that legislative process. So if the voters send a majority of Democrats to Springfield, which is what they've done, then you got to find a path to make things happen there. You got to overcome the fact that Madigan is going to try to obstruct you at every juncture. It can be done. We've seen other governors do it. Just last year, we saw Bruce Rauner do it. And the public liked when that happened. When we passed the school funding reform, when we passed the law that helped the Clinton power plant, you know, the public rallies behind those types of bipartisan agreements, especially in a divided government like this. So we need to do more of that. And the opportunity lies there. We're embarking on this spring legislative session. We need to try to do just like we've done in the past. We need to try to reach some of these bipartisan agreements.
What do you think of the governor's plan to defeat the Democrats by he brought this up several times in the debate with Chicago Tribune. All candidates pledge that they will not vote for Madigan as Speaker of the House. I hear that, and I'm like, what color is the sky this is this guy living in the world? It's never going to happen.
In a few legislative districts, that type of an issue could be enough of an issue to change the outcome of an election. That's where that really helps, right? So voters at home in some districts are going to have choices for candidates for the legislature, and you'll have one candidate refusing to take this pledge to vote against Madigan. That will move voters in some districts. So politically, that's a tool that probably makes sense in some legislative districts.
So you think it could happen?
I don't think that you're going to have a critical mass of Democrats that say they're not going to vote for Madigan. No. I think in some legislative districts in the elections of this March and November, the issue of Mike Madigan will be a compelling issue that could swing that election, the choice between legislative candidates. And so as Republicans, we want people in Springfield who aren't going to vote for Mike Madigan. But I don't think that I would not anticipate that at the end of the November elections, you're going to have some majority of Democrats showing up in Springfield saying, I took some pledge to vote against Mike Madigan.
All right. Do you think that the governor's shooting himself or shooting the party in the foot when he compares Madigan to, you know, the syndicate, criminal, corruption? I mean, the name Madigan has been in the same sentence, I think, with all of those words. When this is the guy you have to deal with to get things done.
Yeah, it's not the path that I would take. I mean, I don't come on your show and, you know, say this person's a—
No, I will.
Yeah.
It's okay for me to do it. Send me your thoughts and I'll just—
There you go, right? You might tweet it out too.
Yeah.
But the path to progress in Springfield is finding a way to work together. Now, there's very little that Mike Madigan and I could ever find to agree upon. But the manner in which I'm going to influence the decisions that he makes as Speaker of the House, or Cullerton more directly as President of the Senate, is to work, again, you work through the public and generate enthusiasm for your ideas. The concern that I have with those who ridicule their opponents on a personal basis is they're undermining their argument in favor of whatever policy that they're proposing. So if you got an idea and you say, this is an idea that's going to reform government, and here's why you should vote for my idea, it's because Scott is a terrible person. The listener to that, some people will say, well, yeah, sure, you know, I know Scott. I got a little smile out of him.
I get it.
But the point is, there are many people in the public who would hear the criticism of an opponent and say, well, you must not have a very good argument in favor of the policy position that you're taking because you've taken to do what kids do in the schoolyard, which is throw stones and call people names.
Mm-hmm. Well, your thoughts on his state address yesterday. I see the biggest round of applause came in a mocking manner when the Democrats stood and applauded when he said he was going to present a balanced budget next month or this month.
Yeah, the whole chamber applauded.
Yeah.
But yes, I think the Democrats were a bit tongue in cheek.
He says he's presented balanced budgets before. And the Democrats are calling him a liar. Has he presented a balanced budget?
Well, you look at last year's. Last year's was balanced. His proposal last year was balanced if the quote grand bargain came into effect. Well, that was a legislative proposal that was being bantered about in Springfield that never came to fruition. So in that regard, you know, it defeats the budget proposal. I think there will be more attention this year on the budget proposal the governor introduces than in any of the prior years of his, you know, governorship. And I think that there's a critical mass of legislators on both sides of the aisle who believe, and this is where I'm at, who believe the number one thing that we must do this spring is come together on a bipartisan balanced budget. I think that I've talked to my colleagues on the other side of the aisle. There's reasonable Democrats who say, we want to work with you Republicans and get this done. There's some of us on our side of the aisle who share that belief and view. Job number one this spring is to go down there and attempt to get that done and hopefully do get that done. The state needs the certainty of a balanced budget being put forward, adopted, so that as we go into the November elections and all the chaos out of that, there's some stability in the state marketplace, schools, vendors, and others, that they're going to they're going to receive the funds that come out of that state budget like they should.
Governor said the legislature should pass a bill to prevent legislators from handling cases before property tax appeal boards. Now, do you think Madigan's ever going to let that see the light of day, whether there's going to be an up or down vote with him on that?
I doubt Madigan's going to allow that. There's actually some questions about whether the courts would allow that as well. You know, the court system actually is the system that regulates attorneys. So, but look, this is going to make some good political noise. I think, you know, property taxes and property tax reform is going to be one of the top three issues of this year, in this election cycle. The public is demanding property tax reform and relief. Madigan is in a very precarious position in that he's a partner of a law firm in Chicago that handles handles a substantial amount of property tax appeal work in front of the Cook County Board of Review, the Cook County Democratic Party chair. You know, consider Madigan's the state party, Democratic state party chairman. The Cook County Democratic chair is a guy named Joe Berrios, who happens to be the Cook County assessor. And so you've got this whole intertwined mess up there that I think is going to – I think the public's going to hear a lot about it, both from Bruce Rauner as a Republican, but also from people like Chris Kennedy as a Democrat, who's making a lot of noise over this this conflict that they see up there.
Possible legislation to reduce the tax burden, property tax burden for seniors, something that's being bantied about.
Yeah, I don't, this is one of those issues that is, you would say it's politically popular, right? You want to give seniors a break on their property taxes.
I think I'm a senior now.
We'll have to check your ID.
All right.
The concern is that, you know, you are aggravating the property taxes of all those who don't get that break. You're going to place the burden that the seniors get relief from gets spread out on other property taxpayers. And you have some seniors, you know, you look at Scott here, right, Kevin? Look, mm-hmm. You know, Scott can afford these high property taxes. Other seniors cannot. So it's not means tested,
right,
is my point.
Yeah.
So that you might have high income seniors who are getting this tax break.
That's like the CTA in Chicago. Was it Blagojevich that gave free rides to seniors? Mm-hmm. All seniors get free rides.
Right.
Yeah, that caused some controversy too. I got an email from my brother the other day. I had a picture. He took a picture of his property tax bill that came,
uh-huh.
He says, how does it compare to yours? He has a house that's over twice as expensive as mine. He pays $1,500 a year less than I do.
Yeah.
In Littleton, Colorado. So go ahead.
Nationally, you know, Illinois is I believe number one in having the highest property taxes in the country, and that is something directly influenced by what we do in Springfield. It's something we could change.
The debate. I know you didn't see it with the Chicago Board, Chicago Tribune, but got a little testy, a little fiery there between Jeannie Ives and Bruce Rauner. From what you've read, what you've seen, what you've heard, what's your take on it?
Well, how'd first of all, when are they coming on JBC?
You know, it's an open invitation.
It is. Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to get Pat Brady to work on that. He says he's tight with the governor, but yet I can't
he
get the governor back on.
Huh?
No, he hasn't. Yeah. I'm going to call him on that.
I think it sounds like Jeannie Ives, you know, held her own and more.
She did.
And, Rauner, it is always more difficult as the incumbent to defend the manner in which you've conducted yourself versus the person on the outside who can, you know, come at you from every direction. But it sounds like she certainly held her own. I think the governor has he's created some of his own problems. And Jeannie Ives is, taking him to task on some of those. The critical question for her will be whether she, I think I said a few, when she first announced, I said, look, if she raises $5 million, I said, let's just throw that number out there. She raises $5 million, I said, I think she gives Rauner a run for his money. She's raised, she got a big check the other day, $500,000.
From a guy who gave Rauner over $2 million the first time he ran.
Yeah. So, but she's raised, now she's raised, I think, a little over $1 million. That's a long way still to go to hit $5 million. And as she's from the suburbs. I think her name identification is probably higher in the suburbs. As you work through central Illinois, there are a lot of people who either aren't aware that there's even a choice on the Republican side for governor, or if they're aware that there's a choice, they're not really clear who the alternate candidate is. And the reality is, the elections are mid-March. The primary elections are mid-March. But, I don't know if Kathy Michael's been in here recently, but Kathy would tell you that even though that election day is mid-March, with early voting, people are going to start voting here very soon. It's like, I think it's February 8th or something.
Oh,
that
my.
It's very soon that early voting and absentee voting begins. Hmm. Better confirm that
all
with
right.
Kathy. But it's soon is my point. And so there's not a lot of – even if someone, in 3 weeks, if someone handed Ives $5 million, then the question becomes, is there enough time to even spend it?
Less than 6 weeks.
Yeah.
All right. You're not going to endorse any candidate right now?
I'm not. I've not been asked to endorse any candidate.
Can I ask you to endorse a candidate?
But you can. I'm for Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah. How's that?
I thought you sounded like a Jeannie Ives man there for a while.
I think Republican voters got to sort this out. And, I don't I've not been asked to endorse anyone. I mean, that's a critical question. I do think Republican voters have to sort this out. Regardless, there's lots of opinions among Republicans on this. I am strongly of the opinion that whichever candidate wins, we need to circle the wagons. There are compelling reasons why we need to support our Republican nominee, whomever it is, as we aim towards those November elections. And I'm sure we'll talk about a lot of that as we, as we move through the spring here.
All right. With less than 6 weeks away, I know how to get Governor Rauner back on the air. I'll get Jeannie Ives on the air.
Go get it.
All right.
Get her done.
Good talking to you. We'll do it again next month. It's State Senator Jason Berrickman on WJBC.